Welcome to Packet Pushes, the data networking podcast where real people discuss events, technology, and work life in the networking industry. This week, we're getting together to focus on a specific topic, Junisphere, the new emulator from Juniper, which helps us to learn about their products. To introduce the people on the show, I want to bring Ivan Pepelniak. How have you been this week, Ivan?
Pretty good, thank you.
When's your VMware webinar?
It's tomorrow.
It'll be...
It's already, the slides are prepared. I'm hopefully full of new knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll get some curve questions, I guess.
Okay, so by the time the podcast goes out, it will have been last week. People can sign up, I think, can't they? You've got your...
Yeah, there are still a few seats left, and there will be a recording available after the webinar, and the next session is in September or so.
Outstanding. And Packet Pushers is still looking for some sponsors and some advertisers, so if anybody listening to the podcast is willing to, then by all means get in contact with me. We'd love to have some sponsorship. And don't forget to sign up to the Packet Pushers mailing list. That would be a real help for me in terms of gathering sponsors going forward. And also with us this week is Dan Beckman. Dan, tell us about yourself and where you're from.
Greetings. I work for Juniper Networks in the marketing organization as part of the Junos Group. Don't hold that against me being a marketing guy, though. Before that, I actually spent most of my time at Juniper in the field working with customers and building out routing topologies and such. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about some of the technologies that we have.
Cool. So you were an engineer once, and now you're in marketing side. And also with us this week is Ashwin. Can you please tell us who you are, what you're doing at Juniper?
Great. My name is Ashwin Kavamal. I am the Director of Product Management for Junisphere. I'm located at the Juniper site in Westford, Massachusetts. Here to talk about Junisphere and hopefully answer some of your questions.
Okay, so I believe that you're in charge of the Junisphere program, Ashwin.
That's right.
So
I am.
did you pick it up from inception and run with it, or is it something you've picked up more recently?
Yeah, it's I've actually formed it into this in what it stands today. So let me give you some background on Junisphere. So Junisphere actually was came out of an internal program that we had many years ago. So a couple of years ago, we had a program in which internally one of the engineering groups required to have a large number of routers to test their product. And they could clearly go and buy all these routers, and that would not scale. So they decided to build a platform that could build all these routers, that could build these virtual routers that could test their hardware. And that started the whole product line. At the same time, for the last many years, we've been hearing from our large sale customers, service providers, enterprises, and the likes, and including training partners, about the need for them to have hardware for short amounts of time. They needed a large amount of routers or to basically test a given topology or test a model or given network. They wanted to test that and model it before they roll it out. And so this has been happening, customers have been asking about this for such a long time. And because of the internal program, we had this team, engineering team, went and developed a lot of this high-tech, cool technology. And that's basically when we put both of these things together and decided to put it together and call it Junisphere. It started about 6-8 months ago when we decided to pull it all together and put a ribbon around it and make it an official product that our customers could then go and solve these specific problems. So,
cool.
Long answer. So
it's been around for a long time, is what I'm saying. What I'm hearing you saying, it's not. Yes. It's not something that just like 6 months ago it's decided. Let's just get going and get this done, kind of a thing. It's a product that's been in development for some time for internal purposes or for special customers. I could imagine from your description that service providers who need to build up huge big backbones would find great value in it.
In any of these customers, including training partners, one of the biggest barriers to entry for getting our training partners up is that they needed equipment. They had to buy this rack and stack, and they're looking, bunch of racks of routers and or networking equipment and run their courses on there. And the biggest problem with them is scaling of their classes. They have said they buy 10 routers over there, and they're limited by the number of students. Getting those routers in place, getting the latest releases in place has always been a problem for these guys. So they needed something that they could actually move around and set up a lab anywhere they went and train them. So this is also happening in the background. So it all came together, this internal engineering group created this product, and voila, it was an answer waiting over there.
It's an interesting use case. I'm actually also a Juniper certified instructor, and one of the hardest problems we've always had is, ironically, even working for a manufacturer, is getting enough gear. So we were actually limited in being able to do trainings for our customers based on availability of equipment racks. So, and this is something that we've really seen as an opportunity to eat our own dog food and basically mm-hmm. take a technology that we have developed to scale up the availability for this type of simulation. So it's definitely something that we see not only as a value to our external partners, but it's also something that we use pretty heavily internally as well.
So we know a bit about where Junisphere came from. And so I assume it was originally used to solve service provider, you know, build custom networks for people. But what is it about Junisphere now that you're trying to solve? Like, so far I've seen you announce Junisphere for universities and for training partners, and that seems like a clear use case.
So Junisphere is sort of an interesting product. What's most interesting about it is when you look at it, it's very easy to see lots of different things that you can do with it. In general, what it really represents is a problem of simulation scale. One of the important things to really differentiate is that Junosphere itself is not virtual Junos. Junosphere is an environment that could run a large number of concurrent devices and also manage the interconnect between those devices. So that's really what Junosphere does. Running inside of it is actually another product that we have called VJX series, and Junosphere is sort of the first place where you're starting to see VJX appear. Mm-hmm. And that is an instance of Junos itself that is capable of running inside of a hypervisor environment. So ultimately, this grew out, ironically, not through a simulation problem, but actually a development problem. We've had internal software developers using this to actually write Junos code for quite a while. And since then, we've been able to take that and adapt it to solving end user problems. But if we look at what we're really trying to solve, if you think of this as a simulator, think of this as sort of the simulator that a pilot working for an airline would go into to sort of check out to be able to fly a 747.
Yeah.
It's designed to solve a big problem.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've said this before. I mean, I've written a blog post about emulators. I don't expect the emulators to be 100% match because that's impossible because the hardware platforms impinge on what the software can achieve. So there's no way for Junisphere to emulate, you know, the QoS scheduling mechanisms for every piece of hardware that's available today.
Well, that's actually an interesting point. So as we've been developing this product, one of the things that we've always been looking at is, as a vendor, when we are doing simulation, what level of fidelity can we offer? So people out there have had access to running Junos on environments other than routers. I'm going to raise my hand and say I was guilty. That's how I learned Junos long before I came to work here. There are ways of running the software directly on bare metal hardware without a router. Hmm. And some of the interesting scenarios that you get into, though, is that it doesn't behave exactly like a router. So as we look at what environments we can create, there's two problem spaces, one of which is how do you automate the work of setting up a lab? And the next one is once you have that up and running, what usefulness does it have in terms of how close to a real piece of hardware does it accomplish, or how close does it emulate the real device? So if you really think about what Junisphere represents, we're sort of attacking the problem on two fronts. So VJX is a program that allows us to create better fidelity of Junos running in a virtual environment. What's most interesting about VJX series is it actually has a data plane. It's not just a control plane Olive. It's a real router.
Okay.
Junisphere, on the other hand, when I think about it, what I really look at is it's a way to save me about 2 or 3 days of setup time.
You mean in terms of not cabling and racking and stuff like that?
Exactly. Perfect example. We did a demo for a customer, and they needed 16 different routers set up in a complex BGP topology. And before Junosphere, I've done this before, and it would literally take about 2 to 3 days to cable up. And it sounds like a long time, but when you realize you have to get the hardware, you have to get the cables, plug the cables into the right places, then start to do interface addressing. You've sank quite a lot of time into just getting your testbed set up before you actually start playing with BGP and doing something useful.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, that's topology, the same. I mean, for example, I've got a lab here, but, you know, I've been able to replace all of my physical hardware with Dynamips, and now there are copies of IOU around on the internet, which are far, you know, which give me access to Cisco's platform. Now, I'm not being, you know, I'm just saying that these are the comparisons that people will naturally draw.
Absolutely. Well, it's a continuum. I mean, we are also network engineers. I use the same platforms that you guys are talking about. GNS3 is a great tool. I've used it myself. And ultimately, the real problem is you're trying to solve a simulation problem.
Yep.
So where Junosphere is interesting to me as a network engineer is the fact that it automates the process of doing that setup. Instead of trying to set up each one of those interconnect, I can actually feed it a topology and it dynamically generates addressing for you.
Right.
These are the types of things that you can really solve. So I was able to actually write a quick script that created the 16-node topology and actually had it up and running within about an hour. And then about 30 minutes of that was me remembering how to write the right statements in Perl to spit out the right syntax. So that's that. As a network engineer, to me, that's the real value of something like JunoSphere. And then the ability to, for instance, snapshot it, save that topology, save the Juno's configs inside of it. That's what I really see as the value of having a service like this.
So for me, it's a little bit different. So for me, as a consultant who's not aligned with a reseller, who's not aligned with a customer full-time, and I don't work for a partner, and I have no relationship with Juniper whatsoever, but I have an interest in getting involved with Juniper products. I would like to do more with the Junos CLI, but I have no way of getting a hold of a router to work on one, and nor do I have the motivation, you know, when it's just, and literally I have steered significant pieces of business away because the company I was working for had no way of getting access to Junos and feeling comfortable that they were, you know, they didn't want to invest, you know, 50,000, 100,000 shekels into training programs for 20, 30 engineers to send them off to become Junos capable. And I think JunoSphere could potentially solve this problem in the long term.
Absolutely. It's a fair point. And it's something that as I work in the field with Juniper, I see as well. It's something where not everybody has access to it. I mean, like I said, I learned Junos on my own by building my own lab, not on Juniper routers. I see the value for it.
So I guess, Ashwin, where do you see the product going in the future? At the moment, JunoSphere is a hosted platform. Do you want to talk a little bit about, tell us a bit?
So Juniper right now is a hosted platform. I mean, it's quite big. It's a hosted platform because of the needs that we're trying to solve. One is that they need a temporary space, routers for a small amount of time. The service providers and enterprises, and for right now, it's all designed within a cloud that we host. You know, we're looking at different ways in which we're going to bring JunoSphere to the market in the future. Right now, we're going to stick with this cloud model and bring more products onto it and bring more different types of tools to this environment. My whole goal is to basically create a lab environment for our service providers and enterprise folks, so that when you walk into a lab, you walk into any of the service provider labs, you see your routers, you need to wire and create your topology that you want. That we solve right now.
Okay.
The next thing that you see in a lab is that what you have is that you have a whole bunch of tools. You have packet generators, you have emulation tools, you have visualization tools. I want to bring all those tools in there so that my whole goal is that when our service provider enterprise, any of these customers walk into this virtual lab, you have all the tools over there and they can run their emulation, model their network the way they do it in the physical lab. So that's our first intent, complete that whole picture. And as it goes further, we'll see more variations of this coming in the future.
As I said, I've been a little bit critical of JunoSphere in terms of in the cloud is fine. If I was a university offering a training program or I was a training partner or somebody like that where the offset of the cost. So for every day, the current pricing scheme around JunoSphere is $5 per router per day. Is that still correct, Ashwin?
That's correct.
And if I'm working in an enterprise or if I'm doing a proof of concept for a customer, I'm not normally fully dedicated to that. The typical scenario is I'm normally an engineer. I've got 2 hours of meetings in a day. I've got 2 hours of emails in a day. I've got 2 hours of junior engineers to work with in a day. And then I've got 2 hours to do labbing in. And yet I'm still paying $5 a day per router. Now, if I'm building a lab that's got 20 routers in it, I'm going to need that for 2 to 3 weeks. Now, all of a sudden, I've got a $2,000 bill that I've barely managed to use. It doesn't seem to meet the requirement that I would see.
So you basically want to have access in chunks of time. That's what you're saying.
Right? No, I want it to be on my desktop so I can use it on the train on the way home. I need to be able to use it on a plane. I need to be able to be sitting in a data center at 2 o'clock in the morning with the internet connection down because that's what I'm working on is a dual home BGP connection, and I need to be able to run it there. I need to be able to run it without trying to find a reseller who's going to cut a purchase order for $500 because most resellers couldn't care about a purchase order for $500 for an independent trader. They don't want my credit card. They don't want to sell it to me. They don't even know who I am.
Thanks for mentioning that, Greg. That's, for me, the biggest barrier to entry.
I can't use this tool as it is.
Nobody would want to talk to Greg or me or Tom for $500.
And now just to finish around that off, the second problem is that it's on the end of an SSL VPN, right? 90% of the companies I've worked for in the last 5 years, I would not be able to access it because punching an SSL VPN out the corporate firewall would be a data breach.
I haven't heard that feedback, but that's good feedback.
Right. So, well, I do work in security, you know, some of the time at least. And then, the, you know, so that those are two fundamental problems for me, is that there's a security risk and I need to be able to validate it in my own time at my own pace. And because it's in the cloud, it's not convenient. And it also assumes that I actually have enough bandwidth. So, for example, where I live in the UK, I live in the central UK, I get 1 meg down and 256k up. That's my lot. It doesn't work so great. You know, you can put all those fancy tools into it, but they're not going to, they're going to work fine in downtown San Francisco, but they're not going to be quite so useful in other parts of the world. Take, for example, in Australia, where the internet is metered and you only get 2 gigabits a month of bandwidth, 2 gigabytes a month of bandwidth. That's all a student can afford to buy because it's so expensive. What about someone in India who's going to, you know, who wants to better themselves and improve themselves? What are they going to do when they can hardly afford a gigabyte a month of metered traffic?
The question for them is, how can they buy it?
Yes.
Now, just from a bandwidth perspective, one of the things is that everything is in the cloud. There's no transactions happening across your link. You are actually going through a browser interface. So the download aspect is not happening to your laptop. So you're not consuming much bandwidth there. But your suggestion about this thing is well taken. I mean, this is something that has come to us from other people also. And that's something that I'm hoping to work with the educational services team to come up with some models for that. But it's too early to say where Junosphere is going to go in the future. But no, I completely buy what you're saying. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. So,
so a few observations, Greg. There was a few questions in there. Let's cover the technical one first, and I think there's a separate conversation worth having about sort of what you're looking to do with the specific product. So the first one, you brought up the SSL VPN. So it sounds like your concern is primarily policy, not necessarily technical. Is that the case? And if so,
It's two level. First of all, there's a policy which says SSL VPNs would allow for data theft, unlogged data theft. And the second one would be is that for the networks I've worked in, you just can't get an SSL VPN out. Everything goes through a proxy and baffled firewalls and, you know, double-layered firewalls and all that. It's just there are no outbound connections that are not proxied.
Fair enough. So one question for that, just there's a couple of things we can look at, one of which is we have a product right now. What you are seeing is the initial implementation of this product. Yep. Obviously, this is a walk-before-you-run scenario.
Sure.
We chose SSL VPN because it's had a lot of success in the marketplace. It's been very good in terms of compatibility with clients, and it's easy to manage and integrate with the rest of the service. So there are reasons we had to start off with SSL VPN. If we make the assumption for now that we're not going to change the way the service is deployed, is there a better way that we can provide access for customers throughout the world to get access into the environment? Is the right answer to look at something other than SSL VPN in addition to SSL VPN, things like SSH inbound, like a jump server or something like that? Do you need unencrypted access? What's the right way to solve that problem?
And as far as I'm concerned, there is no right way.
Okay, so it sounds like the primary issue is more the fact that it's resident remote as opposed to local is the current concern, right?
Yeah.
So it sounds like there's two conversations, one of which is there are different ways to get access to the cloud. Right now, we've started off with our SSL VPN product because we thought this is a good solution. It's something that's in wide use throughout the internet. It sounds like the real challenge is the issue of remote access versus local access.
Yeah. And I've tried to imagine, like, I only get a couple of hours a day in which is lab time. And a lot of that is either squeezed in between other things, where I set out a work plan and I start to attack a particular problem and I work it through, or I'm on a train, or I'm on a plane, or I'm in an airport. This whole idea of getting set and having a fixed slot and then having access to the cloud, and then I've either got to have a 3G modem or some sort of system and a laptop with me to let me get access, or I've got to have this set up and that set up, or I've got to be at home, but that means I can only do it when I'm at home, but I'm not only home for 2 days a week or 3 days a week. That's not. Do you understand where I'm coming from? My suggestion.
Point well taken. I would offer two observations. One, you're much more organized than I am, so I think I would probably have the equivalent problem probably times three because I'm definitely not quite as organized the way I would attack a lab problem.
Yeah.
The next one is there are also concerns about how people interact with the devices when people are doing the work. So in this case, I don't think there's anything that you're saying that we haven't looked at. I mean, this is something that I, as a network engineer, share your feedback. Sure. I would ideally like to have something that's available whenever I can use it.
Ashwin, if you were to release a cut-down version which just did basic routing functions and then had a cloud version which had a superset of functions, such as the packet generators and the features and the host simulators, and is that a possibility that you could consider?
So I'm going to wave my hands now. And at this point, I'm not talking about anything we're specifically doing, but ultimately there's a lot of possibilities. And we've had a lot of discussions about how a service like this is used. And there's a lot of things that we can look at in terms of how we deploy a simulation environment. One of which could be, do we look at alternate ways for getting users access inside of a cloud environment? Before I describe JunoSphere, a lot like that simulator that a pilot would qualify in a 747 with, it's designed to be a big solution. And there are some use cases where it makes a lot of sense. If you're going to do a large amount of simulation, it's a toolkit that's really designed to support that. There are other cases where you want to do something small off the cuff, and it's a different use case that you're trying to hit. So we've looked at a bunch of things, one of which is we could also point out the fact that there are two products involved here, one of which is JunoSphere, which is a service. It's designed to solve this big simulation problem. The other part of this is we also have a way of running Junos in a virtual environment. Now, it's not as simple as immediately releasing a piece of software. It's ultimately a question of how do we allow this product to grow? How do we allow the product to have different types of uses and different types of deployment environments? Right now, what you're seeing is sort of a nascent deployment of VJX series, the virtual Junos instance, mm-hmm. in a place where it is a sandbox. We can learn how it behaves. We can learn how to best use it and how to deploy it in the future.
Yep.
But there are a lot of conversations going back and forth about how are different ways that we can solve the problem. I think
sure,
some
that's it. Well, I mean, I've always maintained that there's a subscription model could work. So we pay, you know, $200 a year to pay for a subscription to VJX, and there's a license key that goes with it, and then every year that would satisfy the lawyers because you're not giving away copyright. Anyway, I'm not a specialist at this. But anyway, so I guess the flip side of this is right. to say to, you know, Ashwin, so the yep. product's currently in the cloud. Obviously, the first wave is being rolled out to training partners and for customers who can live within the bounds of what it is. Now, I had a look at the interface, and it is actually pretty cool. So you connect up over the SSL VPN, and you've got the ability to upload configs, which I thought was pretty cool.
So you like that? That's good feedback.
Yeah. Well, you can actually save your config, and then when you come yes. back, you can upload it and use it again, which I thought was actually, Absolutely. For a first-generation product, was pretty good.
Good. I like that feedback. You know, we hope to, you know, we are improving our UI further. We're getting a lot of feedback from our customers. Quite honestly, I mean, for the folks who have been on there, they just love it. Hmm. I mean, we have so many engineers on there, and they are, we've got good feedback. And, you know, the shortcomings of the user interface, they're going behind and saying, okay, more to come.
Yeah, sorry.
So let me ask you a question, Greg. So ultimately, what you see now is sort of the first iteration of what problems we're trying to solve in a virtual environment. What are the right ways for us to go to market for this? I mean, you are somebody who obviously wants to use a product like this. You mentioned something like a subscription model. What is the right way for us to solve this problem? And keep in mind that we're a vendor, so we have to think about things like how do we support this? How do we go to market with this? How do we make a viable business out of this?
But so here's how I see it. The answer is, I'm likely to spend $1 million or $5 million on Juniper products, including of which is $1 to $2 million of Junos software and licensing and maintenance contracts. And while you're nickel and diming me with Junosphere, I'm feeling a bit peeved. This should be mm-hmm. a tool that comes for free to help me adopt your products. It should be a straight out sales tool. Dear customer, you've got an objection. You're not familiar with Junos. Here's this great tool. Run it in your thing. Any changes that you need to do, any training, here's the tool. It should be funded shouldn't be nickel and diming me $5 a shot. That's the way number one. Because I'm going to spend way more money adopting your products in the enterprise if I can get access to a decent emulator. And that's how you should do it. It shouldn't be billed. It should be free. Put it in a subscription pack if you really, really want to. So say, here's a like an MSDN. How much product has Microsoft been successfully shifting into the enterprise simply because they give every enterprise a free version of everything that they ever make for the proud subscription of $150 or $200 a year? So that's what I think you should do. You should look at the bigger picture. The CTO, the CEO of Juniper, should be sitting there saying, this is a great opportunity for me to grow my revenue and penetrate the enterprise market. You've done all these great programs around Junos, you know, one day of Junos, you know, switching from Cisco iOS to Junos. This is exactly the same thing, and it should be funded out of the same budget.
I think Greg's onto something here with some of his previous comments as well. The sales tool can be, say, a crippled version of VJX, or maybe even like a Junosphere Lite, where it only allows three hypervisors to run at one time, or limited to 100 routes, or something like that. Just enough to whet the appetite of the people who would necessarily start looking at your software. Then, for a subscription model for, you know, $500 a year or something like that, you get a less limited version. Maybe it's the Junosphere Personal, where it's limited to 20 devices or something like that, running full versions of VJX. And then if you want to add into the cloud later all the things you're talking about, packet generators and all those value adds that you can then ask for later, it's the to use your example, it's the walk before you run kind of thing, because, you know, like Greg said, I may want to look at Juniper for my VAR as an additional reseller, but if I don't know anything about you, I can't very well bring that to my boss. But if I can pass your emulator around to some guys and say, hey, let's take a look at this and see if you like it any better than the other one, then they can come back to me later and say, we really want this software, and that's when I can write you a check for whatever it takes to get the personal emulator on my desktop so that I can start building out my additional, you know, how am I going to start flipping my customers from one vendor to you guys?
So what's the right thing for you to get access to? So if we look at this in terms of a product, there's really two problems that are being solved. One of which is, how do you provide access to Junos itself as an operating system, either for user experience, for protocol behavior, if in the case of a software-based data plane, to have access to data plane behavior and test configurations, class of service, those kind of things. There's also another problem set of, how do you actually build a useful topology of this? One of the challenges is of just having a piece of virtual code is it's only useful as what it's talking to. If we had just one device where you can log in and test the CLI, it's vaguely interesting, but it's kind of boring after about 5 or 10 minutes because it's not actually doing anything. The real value that I see in a simulation environment is the fact that you have multiple devices. They are exchanging routing protocols. They actually are emulating a network. The question there is now scale. So today we're limited by the amount of memory consumed in a laptop or in a PC environment. And keep in mind that we're not running code that was written 15 years ago. Junos is a much more modern operating system and has requirements for more memory. So we're limited in terms of how many we can run inside of one standalone device. One of the big things that we generate in Junosphere is the idea that connectivity between individual instances is effectively distributed among a lot of different hardware hypervisors so that we can sort of scale it to N. That's a challenging thing for us to scale down because it's designed to solve a big problem. It's the 747 simulator where you want a copy of Flight Simulator for your PC effectively.
Well, I'm not – I guess if you look at what we've done, if we look at the other emulators which we've used around the place, so if you look at what Viata does or Cisco iOS inside of Dynamips, people are regularly putting together 16 gigabytes or, you know, machines to run 12 routers. So I can't imagine that Junos has got a memory footprint, you know, a simplified version that needs to be more than that. You couldn't fit into that sort of footprint.
That should be commensurate with that.
Yeah.
The memory footprint that I've seen, you can get it down to a stable environment running at about 512 megs of RAM. So if when you add in all the hypervisor stuff that's going to have to run on top of that, you should be able to get 10 routers running on a, what I would say, modern piece of equipment.
So one of the interesting conversations we've had is sort of what is the right size of environment to simulate? And it really, for just the conversations that we've had internally, it really matters where you've come from. My experience is from the enterprise side. So I've probably worked on a lot of networks very similar to what you guys work on. And my gut reaction to that question was, well, if you give me a router with 5 interfaces and I can run about 6 of them, I can generate some pretty interesting topologies and start playing with something.
That would be that. I would agree with that. That's what you're talking about. It really only has to be Ethernet interfaces, serial interfaces, because you get different protocol behavior over serial than you do over Ethernet. We don't need for enterprise work or for labbing work or for, you know, learning work. We don't need ATM or Sonnet SDH or... So maybe there is scope to have a cut-down version which is more freely available for remote use, and then there's a more sophisticated version in a cloud for those people who want it.
So the other question that I would have is, and again, we can only talk in hypotheticals here, but I mean, keep in mind that a lot of these conversations are happening here back at corporate, but whenever we would look at trying to solve a simulation problem, we'd want to understand what level of fidelity we'd need. In the JunoSphere environment, we've aimed for a relatively high level of fidelity in that it is Junos. It's the same Junos control plane. So your BGP, OSPF, ISTIS, MPLS protocols run the same way. But at the same time, there's actually an emulated data plane inside the VJX series. So it actually is vaguely similar to how an iChip would behave. So you do have the capabilities of configuring things like class of service behaviors. It actually does transit a packet, albeit virtually, but it actually queues it. It actually transmits it out. It gets carried between different systems across a socket instead of a physical wire, but it actually is acting as a router. Multicast is multicast, broadcast is broadcast. So to that extent, we've been trying to provide something that is a high enough level of fidelity that you can reasonably use it for simulation.
Right.
Is that required for the use cases that you guys are trying to hit? I mean, if you're just trying to learn Junos, you don't necessarily need to care about...
No, not at all. Not for the enterprise, I don't... Well, some people in the enterprise will. They'll want a full validation. But you don't get that with what we have available from other people today, except maybe Viata, whose whole system is open sourced in the first place. You don't get those. What you're trying to solve there is a 5% use case. 95% of the problem is getting BGP working and understanding, MPBGP and then getting an MPLS configuration, and doing all the stuff that you want to do around, redistributing OSPF into BGP. There's a certain amount of just fundamental knowledge that, while I'd be confident doing that in, say, another platform, doing it in Junos, I don't even know where to start. That would be 95% of the use case that anybody ever wants it for. I mean, how many people are doing their JNCIA or, JNCP who OSPF, and that's it. OSPF, a bit of BGP, bit of ISIS, and that's kind of it. We don't need high fidelity for 95% of the use case, except maybe for some of your specialist customers.
And I think that could be a piece that's loaded into the cloud. Here is the QoS module, if you want, and we're going to allow you to completely emulate QoS behavior on a router, but you're going to have to pay extra for that. And it's not something we can include in the lesser product because it's not something that we can accurately simulate on a desktop processor. Kind of makes sense to a degree. Greg's right. If I could pick up JunOS, the JunOS cookbook or the JunOS to iOS thing and figure out how to set up BGP and MPLS and the basic routing protocols on your device, then you've sold me. Because now it's not so foreign to me anymore. Yep. But yet, I still have to go back to the QoS command reference every once in a while to figure out how to implement certain QoS commands on the teal boxes. Because QoS just doesn't come naturally to me, not like BGP, not like MPLS, not all that other stuff. So, Greg's right. It's a 5% use case.
And I think we don't 5%
would be willing to pay for that.
And we don't have it today for any other product.
No.
So I don't understand why you're trying to solve that problem, I guess.
So if we start looking at the problems we're trying to solve, I think if Juniper is guilty of anything, we usually tend to aim for bigger problems before simpler ones. And I think the conversation that we're having here is a perfect example of that.
Yes.
When we talk about – to put things in perspective, when we talk about fidelity of simulation, we think of what VJX is currently doing as medium to low. High fidelity for us would be to the level of emulating how an ASIC behaves in peaking, poking registers.
That's right. So you're saying you want to emulate the MX80 with a Sonnet SDH interface with this card there.
Exactly. Right. And those conversations happening now. So that's the type of fidelity we talk about.
Yeah. We don't need that.
So
I've spent less than, 3 or 4 days working on the Junos CLI in my entire 20-year career. So that's your problem, convincing somebody like me to get enough comfort with Junos to then go and say it in front of a customer and say, yes, Mr. Customer, you need to be buying a Junos SRX or a, you know, an MX-40 or an MX-20 for that internet connection. And look, we've got this emulator here, so any worries you've got about getting comfortable with the CLI, we can play with it there. Bang. You've just removed
absolutely
a huge sales objection. And it doesn't have to be perfect.
I don't think Ashwin's going to want me to say this, but I think the uncomfortable fact is you're not the target audience for what we're currently doing with Junosphere.
Right.
The problems we're trying to solve with Junosphere are you have a big network. You want to be able to do what-if simulations of what happens if you change your traffic engineering criteria, what happens if you change some class of service behavior, how do you start to look at validating MOP and SOPs, how do you validate whether your management OEM systems can actually speak to these individual versions of devices. This is what sort of the initial
rollout is for. See, now that sounds like a use case to me. So although you've got a lot of big customers, right, so you've got big service providers who are asking, who've got big dollars in there, but I'd also put it to you that the enterprise market is also a big dollar value that you are currently unable to attack because you've got the resistance to adoption of.
To me, this sounds like the original use cases for things like IOU and the not-so-secret Titanium emulator from your competitors. They built it so that people could do proof-of-concept stuff so that they didn't have to wreck their networks or buy $2 million worth of lab gear in order to replicate their environment. And in my mind, you guys are building a mansion for those customers when Greg and I are used to the outhouse of, you know, tiny emulators that stink and don't give us a lot of room to do what we need to do. And so we would be happy with, you know, a VJX instance, whereas you guys are attacking that market where, and to me, it almost feels like you're going after your existing customers, giving them a freebie up front to hook them on it later. It's that's where you need to be attacking it going forward, in my opinion.
It's good feedback. I mean, quite honestly, I mean,
absolutely. So what I was going to say is that there's a reason we wanted to have this conversation with you about Junosphere, because we really do see that our first iteration of this is designed for specific scenarios to solve specific problems. And what we really see is this is sort of the beginning of a new way to attack different markets. And as much as we'd like to attack every market immediately, there are some constraints in how we go to market. How do we actually develop this as a product? How do we support it? How do we adapt this going forwards? How do we control the amount of fidelity versus usefulness? So these are all the things that we're exploring. And I think a lot of the interesting discussions have been sort of how do we solve this big problem? Because one of the things that Juniper has found is if you can solve a big problem first, it's much easier to trickle down that technology we use to build a mansion to build you a really nice outhouse, as opposed to starting off building you an outhouse and trying to build an out or a mansion that is effectively built like an outhouse. So I think one of the reasons we really want to have a chat about this
I think we're stretching the metaphor here. It's done.
It hasn't broken yet, but I'll get there soon. What I really do see, though, is that this is an exciting place for us to explore in terms of what we can do. It is effectively the new frontier for networking organizations in terms of there's a lot to what an operating system does in terms of how people interact with it, how you test it, how do you run networks that are really changing over time.
Well, change control is a huge one for the enterprise. Service providers have got rigid change control procedures, and they're the people who are asking you to get your change validation environment from the sounds of it. But enterprise has the same problem, but not to the same level of aggression that a service provider might have, because we have a different scale. We have far more changes, far more dynamic, far more fluid environments in an enterprise network than a service provider network, because they're just inherently different. But I think we've probably taken this as far as we need to go. So I think we might wrap it up there. So Ashwin, where can we find more about Junosphere on the web?
Our website, www.junosphere.net. We have an entire section in there for Junosphere. There's tons of information. There is help guides and product information. So,
And I did receive a demonstration from someone in your team recently, and I would commend the product to you. It does look nice, and it does have a lot of nice features in it. For all my whining on this show about it not suiting my personal needs, it may well suit you. So I think that we will call it a show for that this week, and thanks for listening to the Packet Pushers. We should be back again real soon. I'd like to thank our external resources for joining us this week. Ashwin Kuvamal, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
And Dan Backman, thank you again.
Cheers.
And Tom, I know you came along halfway through the show, and Ivan's had to drop off for various reasons. What are you going to be doing this week?
I'm going to be traveling for the rest of the week, so I'm going to have a lot of time to write blog posts and maybe even come up with some interesting use cases for Junisphere. But if you want to follow along on Twitter, I'll be tweeting some snarky things as Networking Nerd, and my blog is at networkingnerd.net, where there's a little more substance and a little less snark, but not much less.
And I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me at etherealmind.com or on the Twitter as at etherealmind. I'd like to thank Juniper for taking the time to reach out and talk to us about Junisphere. It's great to see them joining us on the Pushers. Love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Alternatively, check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net. Leave comments, hurl abuse, or follow us on the Twitter as at packetpushers. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.